Focus on results, not on work. If you don't know what your business is going to look like when it's finally done, the only thing you can do is focus on work. If you haven't a picture in your mind of why you're doing this in the first place, it becomes an absolute waste of time because it just consumes the technician in you to keep busy, 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 doing it. You can find a million things to do every day. Does anybody know that you do that? I mean, if there weren't something to do, you'd figure out something to do. Why? Because if you're not doing something, you don't exist. Nobody thinks. They don't even value people who think. Value people who do. Action-oriented. Do it. Line, you know, on the line. Do it. Go out and sell something. Go out and make something. Go out and do something. Go out. Even if there's nothing to do, make something to do. Action speaks louder than words. What, you know, all these expressions. Do it. And how many of you do that? Anybody here do? Just keep busy doing it. Get consumed by doing it. Okay, so let's talk about the seven steps of a business development program. Let's say that we've agreed that what we need to do is we need to begin to practice this innovation, quantification, and orchestration, this continuous improvement process in our business. It never stops. So what's the first step in this? First step in building a business that works has nothing to do with the business at all. First step is what I call the development of your primary aim. Your primary aim. And what is your primary aim? Well, I want you to picture or envision a room. I want you to just go through this process with me. And the room is dimly lit. It's a lovely room, and 70, 80 people in the room, all seated quietly in beautifully upholstered chairs. Chairs are muted fabric, and the carpeting is the same color, and drapes on the walls, not a sound. Can you see it? They're all seated, looking toward the front of the room. The front of the room is a dais like this one, and on the dais is a table, a large table. On either end of the table are candles, and they're flickering gently. Between the candles is a box, and in the box, you, stiff as a board. This is what I call your COD. It's your crap out date. Now, suddenly, when you get that picture, I want you to hear this. From the four corners of the room comes a voice. And it's your voice. It's a recording. And you're telling everybody in the room the story of your life. The rivers you forged, the mountains you climbed, the people you touched, the extraordinarily passionate, vital things that you did. Ogden Nash once said, it isn't the sins of commission that kill us in our lives. It's the sins of omission. It's the things we don't do. What are the things you've committed to do that you just have sort of set aside and then set aside again and then set aside again and then set aside again? You know, until we get this handled, until the family grows up, until the business is handling itself, until the light at the end of the tunnel. The light at the end of the tunnel, ladies and gentlemen, is COD. And every second we sit here, every minute, is a minute you'll never see again. I mean, we really don't get that. Because we're so out of touch with our mortality and keep busy so we don't have to think about it. We don't have to confront the void. So what's your primary aim? Your primary aim would be this. I'd like you to imagine going home tonight and beginning to write the script for that tape. What would you like to be able to say at your COD to those people about your life after it's too late to do anything about it? I'm suggesting that if we were to begin to do that, if we were to actually do that, if we were to take that seriously, and I have no expectation that anybody's going to start writing like crazy. I just don't think anybody's going to do it. My experience is that it's the most difficult thing you ask people to do. What do you want with your life? It's almost like, what do you want to do when you grow up? I'm not asking what do you want to do when you grow up. I'm asking what do you want to be? I'm not talking about doing it all. I'm talking about being. It's something we've left out of the equation. If your business isn't giving you the opportunity to expand your life in all potential areas of your life, then your business is taking it. And I'm suggesting most places I go with most people in most businesses, the latter is true. They're consumed by their business and have long ago forgotten that that was supposed to be the other way around. So the reason I put what is your primary aim at the beginning is because it's so critical, understanding what I wish for my life. The most critical point, because without understanding that, I can't then take the next step, which is how do I get my business to do that? See, it's the first step in separating ourselves from our business and holding our business out there and seeing it for what it really is, a means to an end, not the end in itself. The problem is the way we go about doing business, doing it, busy, 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 consumed by it. It becomes life and death to us. It actually becomes life and death. We lose ourselves. So what's your primary aim? Second step in a business development program. Once you have a picture of what you want for your life, the next question is, what do you want your business to look like in order for that to become possible? How big is your business going to be? What are the gross revenues of your business going to be? You remember I said to you that the only sole purpose of a business is to sell it, and that essentially either they buy it or you do. Well, if the sole purpose of a business is to sell it, that is effectively you need to have a picture of what that business needs to be in order to justify somebody buying it. What's it going to be? $1 million business, $2 million business, $10 million business, $50 million business when you're done? What are the gross profits going to be? What are the pre-tax net profits going to be? What are the after-tax net profits going to be? I'm talking about creating financial standards for this business you're going to create in such a way that would cause somebody else to say, you do that? How do you do that? That's incredible. How many of you know what the financial standards of an operating business are in your market, among your competitors? What would be the ideal thing to begin to do? The ideal thing to begin to do would begin to ask the question, how can we do better than that in our business systemically? So as to show that person who's going to buy our business the extraordinary profits we're able to produce, the extraordinary margins we'll be able to produce, extraordinary revenue we're able to produce. Why are we able to produce it? Because we've systematized our business in such a way that it leverages it to do business significantly better than the competition, at lower cost, with higher impact, with greater predictability. You're here to build a franchise prototype so it can be replicated, whether you create a second one or not. Because if you were to create a franchise prototype, this perfect little turnkey operation, this perfect little money machine like Ray Kroc created, whether or not you ever created a second one, understand you're free. The business is predictably able to grow, to expand, to do what that business needs to do in extraordinarily predictable fashion. The consistency of that is what you're looking for. So in the creating of your strategic objective, you're creating standards against which you're going to measure that business when it's finally done. When is it going to be done? I'm going to ask you to create a point in time when, in fact, it's going to be done. When will that be? What is your strategic objective? Where is it going to be? Is it going to be local? Is it going to be regional? Is it going to be national? You're going to be Sydney? You're going to be in Los Angeles? You're going to be in Tijuana? Where are you going to be? How many of them are there going to be? How are they going to operate? And effectively, you have to ask all of these questions. Who's your customer going to be? When your business is finally done, who specifically is your customer going to be? What are you building this business to do and for whom? What are the trading zones within which your business is going to operate? How many prospective customers of your central demographic model have to exist within those trading zones in order for you to effectively produce the revenue that you're planning on producing, the profit you're planning on producing, the pre-tax, the net tax, et cetera, and so forth. Questions, 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 questions. What is your business going to look like when you're finally done? You got to draw a picture of this business. Without a picture, you don't know anything. As Tom Watson had a picture of what his business is going to look like when it's finally done, which is what told them what to do every day. So this picture of your business is critical. When they talk about visionaries, it's not just some abstraction, some word becomes rhetoric. It's literally the ability to draw a concrete picture of what you intend to do. It's absolutely necessary to the building of an extraordinary business, to the building of this franchise prototype, this perfect little turnkey operation that you're going to turn around and ultimately show to somebody else. Third step in a business development program, organizational development. You know, organizational development is simply creating an organization chart. You say to a small business person, you need an organization chart, and they look at you like you're absolutely nuts. I mean, what do I need a chart for? And he's doing this, I'm doing that. Who needs boxes? I'm asking you through organizational development in your business to begin to think about your business differently than we're accustomed to thinking about it. I want you to think about your business functionally rather than personally. I want you to think about your business functionally rather than personally. Rather than thinking about what people do, I want you to think about what needs to be done. We'll be talking about when we get into organizational development. Seriously, get into it. We'll be talking about those things and why partnerships don't work. And so you might as well just resign right now. And why family businesses are really sucking wind. And we'll find out what all those problems are. But we're also going to talk about how to solve those problems. But for now, what I want to do is take an organization chart and give you a standard organization chart for everybody's business. First of all, is the first box in the organization chart. It's at the top in the center. This is going to be a hierarchy, despite what everybody says. You know, hierarchy doesn't work. You know, matrix management that everybody talks about. This whole idea of organizational development is a very pragmatic thing that reaches for something higher. And I want us to touch the first box, and that's the president. President's box, we'll call it. Whatever you call it in your company is fine. It's the boss. I want to suggest there's a rule in business which says there can only be one boss. I know that's going to throw all the partners in a tizzy, but what I want you to do now that we see this box, it says president or chief operating officer, I want you to write down who is the president in your business. So just everybody write down the name. If we hear any turmoil at the back of the room, it's the partners having a discussion. Right. Okay, now reporting to the president are three boxes in every business. Now, look, I know there are differences in all your businesses, but I'm just trying to give you sort of the essential functions of any business. In the left-hand box is M for marketing. In the middle box is O for operations. And in the right-hand box is F for finance. Okay? I want you to put the name in each of those boxes. Who does that in your company? Now what I want you to do is I want you to draw three boxes under marketing. And in one of the boxes in the far left side, you put S. That's for sales, sales manager. In the middle box, you put CS. That's customer services. And in the next box, you put A/R, advertising research. Okay, I don't want to do operations because there we do have some very distinctive differences in your businesses. So let's just leave operations for the time being. Let's go over to finance. And under finance, I want you to put three boxes. The first box is A, that's accounting. The second box is AM, that's administration. And the third box is MIS, and that's management information systems. Or services, whichever you wish to call it. And I want you to put whose ever name goes in those six boxes that I've just indicated. Okay. Now you might say, come on, Michael. I mean, if I were to add all these people to my business, I'd be out of business. Yeah, but I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about functions. Let me ask you a question. Does everybody here have a marketing function in your business? You better. Does everybody here have an operations function in your business? You better. Does everybody here have a finance function in your business? You better. Does everybody here have a sales management function in your business? I'm not saying a sales manager. I'm saying, do you have salespeople? Anybody here have customer services? Does anybody here have advertising and research? Anybody got to do it? Anybody got to do with accounting? Anybody got to do administration? Anybody got to get information from your business? So obviously we got all these functions, no matter whether we got people or not. So now put the names in the boxes. And what did you find out? The first value of the organizational development process is to see where you are in the business. Now, is that a mind blower to see how many jobs you've got? Does anybody notice how many jobs you got? But you knew that before I said it. But you see, the problem is you're not doing them. The point is they're not getting done. The problem is nobody's doing that work. You say, come on, I'm working my tail off. I'm busy, 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 doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it. Here's the little secret. For the next 2 weeks, here's something I want you to do. I want you to create a log, a daily log. Every day for the next 2 weeks, I want you to record from the moment you get into your business to the moment you leave your business, every single task you perform. And what I want you to do is I want you to identify where in the organization chart you're doing it. You hear what I said? You keep a log by the minute of every task you perform in your business. Every time you do something, you do it, and then I want you to identify where in that organization chart you're doing it. Now that's going to open your eyes extraordinarily. All of your imagination tells you a whole host of things about what you do in your business. You're going to begin to discover something that'll blow your mind. You're going to begin to see actually where you spend your time. And ladies and gentlemen, what you're even going to find is you're wasting an enormous amount of time. And we'll get back to the problem that we talked about. The problem that we talked about is that there can only be one boss. But we'll solve that problem. Each and every box that I've just described needs to be defined by what we call a position contract. We go through the process of organizational development, and during these 2 days, we'll go through what a position contract actually looks like, what you're actually defining. But effectively, you're creating the standards for each of these boxes in your chart. So that what? So that you can manage process rather than people. And so you can begin to implement in your business what we call management by agreement. Agreement about what? Agreement about that, which is what? That standard that we've established for that position. And the position contract is not a job description. It effectively is a contract between the company and the person who is now being held accountable for this specific role or function or position in the business, for which we have standards of performance, for which we have identified the results. So organizational development is one of the most exciting things you can do in your business. It begins to focus your attention on what needs to be done as opposed to who's going to do it. It begins to focus your attention on the track that you now have created for getting out of your business. On the organization chart I've just described, when you're selling something, where are you on the chart? Below the S, which means you're a salesperson. You're doing the work of a salesperson below sales manager, below vice president of marketing, below president and chief operating officer, and certainly you're not the owner. You're a salesperson. You see that? You're working in your business as a salesperson. Now, what's also true, where do you spend most of your time? At the top of the chart or at the bottom of the chart? The bottom of the chart. What I'm suggesting, ladies and gentlemen, is how to get the hell out of the bottom of the chart to the top of the chart where you belong. And your company, 90% of your time should be spent on strategic work. Yes, in a small business, 90% of your time should be spent on strategic work and only 10% on tactical work. In the middle of your company, 60% of the time should be spent on tactical work and 40% on strategic work. The bottom of the company, 90% should be spent on tactical work and 10% on strategic work. So organizational development, begin to think about your business functionally. We're going to be touching on this big problem about ownership. This big problem about partnership. You'll be looking at the organization of your business in such a way that you can begin to distinguish exactly how to do this so that later on you don't create massive, massive problems with your people, with yourself, with your partner, with each other, etc. And there is a way to do that. So let's go on to the next step in a business development program. So now you have a vision of your life. Now you have a vision of what your business is going to look like when it's finally done. It's going to be a perfect little turnkey operation, a perfect little money machine. It's going to be a perfect little franchise prototype. It could be replicated a million times if you wanted to, and you may not want to. You may only want to have one, and you're going to sell that little son of a bitch, and it's going to be gone. And then you're going to go on to the next one. What's the fourth step? Management development. I'll tell you a story. Quite some time ago, I was driving from Los Angeles to San Francisco, and typically when I take this trip, I drive straight through. You know, it's about 400, 500 miles, about a two-hour drive, you know. But for whatever reason, I got tired, and I decided to look for a hotel, and as luck would have it, I find a place. I walk into the reception area. I'd never seen this place before, and this reception area was absolutely exquisite. It's a beautiful young woman behind the registration counter immediately gives me her attention. It's a lovely gold gown with the logo and crest of the hotel on her breast, on the gown. But they have a room, a bellman pops right up, a little cap and gold buttons on his gold uniform, and he flashes off to the room, and I follow in a leisurely fashion, opens the door to the most extraordinary hotel room I have ever been in my life. As true today as it was then. 17-foot high ceilings, natural cedar walls. The cedar walls are original graphics of the flora and fauna of the Pacific West Coast. In the middle of the room is this four-poster white pine king-sized bed with a white bedspread spread tightly across it. Not a crease, not a wrinkle, not a spot. I mean, perfect white against this white pine bed. It was just absolutely immaculate. At the foot of the bed is this huge fieldstone fireplace. And in the fireplace are logs waiting to be burned. Beneath the logs are paper crunched up and kindling waiting to be lit. And on the hearth is a designer's match waiting to be struck. You know? Nirvana. I'd found it. The skylight is slightly ajar. You could hear the sound of the ocean, the birds, the crabs, whatever the hell's out there. Yeah. I get changed and I'm ready for dinner. I remember they told me how to get to the restaurant. I open the door. I walk out into a redwood grove, down a lovely, neat little path into a valley. I could hear the deer settling down for the evening. The quail doing whatever they do, you know. Walk up a knoll to the top, overlooking the entire Pacific Ocean. And there's the restaurant. The stars are out in profusion, black sky. Crowds of people. Oh, well, you know how it goes. I'm going to have to wait. I go to the maitre d', I announce my presence, and he said, Mr. Gerber, your table's waiting. Takes me to the table, immediately a lovely waitress in a gold gown with a logo on her breast. Greets me, incredible menu. There's a fire burning in the fireplace. There's a guitarist playing Bach fugues in the corner. I proceed to have the most extraordinary meal I've ever had. Have a couple of bottles of extraordinary wine, a glass of brandy to touch off the evening. I'm feeling no pain, and I go back to the room. I open the door, and there's a fire in the fireplace. The quilts roll down on the bed and tied with two little bows at the foot of the bed. The pillows are plumped up, just like my mother used to do when I was a boy. Mints on the pillows. There's a glass of brandy by the side of the bed. The same brandy I'd had in the restaurant. For dinner. They figured I hadn't had enough yet. There's a little card nestled cozily between the two pillows, and it says, and I paraphrase, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for coming here this evening. If there's anything I can do for you, anything at all, day or night, please, don't hesitate to call. I'm Kathy. Now, I have a hell of an imagination. But I decide not to press my luck, you know. I go to sleep, I wake up in the morning, and there's a gurgling in the bathroom. Kathy! Yeah. Go in the bathroom, there's nobody there, but there's a coffee pot, an automatic perk, bubbling away. And a little card, and it says, your brand of coffee. And sure as hell it was. Now, how did I know that? I remember the night before in the restaurant, they'd asked me, what brand of coffee do you prefer? And here it was. The minute I get that one, there's a knock at the door. First thought in my feverish little brain, Kathy. I go to the door, I open it up, there's nobody there, but there's a newspaper on the mat, the New York Times, my newspaper. How did they know that? And I remember the night before, when I checked in, they'd asked me, what newspaper do you prefer to read? And here it was. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that little scenario has reoccurred every single time I've gone back to that hotel. But from the very first time, they never again asked me for my preferences. I call. I say, hello, this is Mr. Gerber. Mr. Gerber, it's been 72 days since you were here last. How's that little boy, Sam? And how's your wife? Well, my goodness. Your little baby should be here any minute, shouldn't she? Well, yes, she did arrive. Who are you? You know. Do you understand? I don't get this treatment when I call home. So what do they give me? They give me a match, a mint, a cup of coffee, and a newspaper. And for the privilege, I pay them $3.50 a night. $3.50 a night for a $135 room. You add it up. That's the most expensive match, mint, cup of coffee, and newspaper I ever had. And I don't care. I'm lonely. Do you understand? The point is, anybody can do that. It's not that they do that. It's that I can. You see, the power of that management system isn't that they do it. It's that I do it. It's that I can make a call anytime I choose with the absolute predictability of producing that result. So when I get in the mood, I go and I make the call and I'm in charge. It's their ability to provide me with the replicable, every single time, predictable, consistent experience that I wish to have over and over and over again that makes that place such an extraordinary place. Without a management system, they couldn't do it. So what's your version of that? Without a management system, there's absolutely no control. Without a management system, there's absolutely no turnkey operation. Without a management system, there's absolutely no way of being able to predict anything at all in your business. That management system is a key component of this hierarchy of systems that have to exist in an extraordinary business. And by its absence, you will experience manifestations of lack of control and know why. And we're going to be talking about that more when we get into the management component of our meeting together. Now that we know what we want for our life, now that we know that we have chosen a business to do that, understand that you could have chosen anything. You could be an entrepreneurial architect, you could be an entrepreneurial musician, you could be an entrepreneurial artist, you could be an entrepreneurial physician, you could be an entrepreneurial anything. In this particular case, we're talking about the entrepreneurial business person who is looking for a way of building a business that's going to give him or her what he or she wants for their life. It just happens to be a business you've chosen. Well, you've already chosen that. This is the path to take. Now what we're talking about is, what does that business need to look like? How does that business need to act? Organizational development. How does that business need to be managed in order for that to be predictably able to produce that result? The next is people development. How do we get our people to do that? Let me say emphatically, you can't get your people to do that. You can't get your people to do anything. You don't have the power. None of us do. Hell, we can't even get ourselves to do the things we want us to do. I'm saying we can't get our people to do anything. In fact, I'm going to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that motivation is a myth. We can't motivate people to do anything either. I call it the myth of motivation. I'm suggesting that, in fact, rather than trying to motivate people to increase productivity, exactly the opposite is true. Increase their productivity and their motivation will follow. I'm suggesting we're trying to do the wrong thing, trying to get them jacked up to do better. And I'm saying by doing better, we get jacked up. It's exactly the opposite. And so we don't need to motivate people. We need to inspire people. How do we inspire people? By giving them a place in which they're going to work, which is significantly more alive than any other place they've been in. It starts by the very first words that you communicate to people. So a people development process is touching people where they live. I'm suggesting, for example, that companies don't have missions. Forget about a mission statement for your company. I'm saying it's a waste of time. People have missions. So what I'm saying is, the founder of the business has a personal mission. Unless you have a primary aim, unless you've looked at your business and what your business needs to be able to do and how it needs to be able to do it in order to satisfy you, you cannot communicate your personal mission to anybody. But your personal mission is communicated the first time when you hire your first person. That relationship will work to the degree that your mission is exactly the same as the mission of the person you're talking to. And so what effectively you're not doing is, you're not trying to get people to buy your mission. What you're trying to do is to see whether or not they share it. And so you've got a point of view about life. You're hiring people who share it at the beginning of the relationship. So in the process of engaging people, you're engaging people at their heart. People who are looking for more than just work. So what is, in fact, the chief motivating characteristic, the chief moving characteristic of your business? It's the vision of the entrepreneurial founder of the business. It's the idea that person has. Not about making shoes, not about creating software, not about building a better computer, not about things themselves, but about discovering a better way of doing something that touches people where they live. And a people development process, people development program, is the process by which you literally do that. You touch where people live. And they say, you do that? I've been looking for a place like that. I've never worked at a place like that. This is too good to be true. So people development is touching people where they live. Marketing development. Sixth step of a business development program. There are really two very strict components. Demographics, who buys. Psychographics, why do they buy. And ultimately, geographics, where do they buy. So demographics is the science of marketplace reality. It tells you who buys. Who is your customer? There is no such thing as the market. There are just very, 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 very specific and identifiable markets. And your business, whatever your business is, must choose. And most businesses don't. Your business must choose. See, at the very beginning of your business, we're starting your business all over again. I'm suggesting that you must choose. Choose to do what? Choose to focus your attention on a very specific market for a very specific reason, in a very specific way, to provide a very specific result, to do what? To alleviate the key frustrations this person, this segment of the market, this group of people who have like characteristics, which is your central demographic model, your most probable consumer. You have to do that in a very intentional way. And once you know who buys, once you've identified that consumer for whom you're going to provide the most extraordinary answer, the only way you're going to know what that answer is going to be is to determine what their psychographics are, why they buy and why they don't. What is it about the Japanese that enabled them to go from rubble to the second largest economic power in the world, the second largest economic power in the world in such a short, relatively short period of time? What is it that they have? I'm going to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, certainly nothing that we don't and can't have. They have absolutely stunningly focused intention. Ray Kroc had absolute intention, knew exactly what he wished to do. They call it tunnel vision. Intention, knew exactly what he intended to do. Fred Smith had absolutely clear intention, knew exactly what he was going to do. Walt Disney had very clear, focused intention, knew exactly what he intended to do. He's going to create the most extraordinary amusement park ever created in the world. Like nothing ever created before. Light years from anything that anybody had even thought about creating before. So much so that people thought he was mad. Everybody at Disney thought he was crazy. Every extraordinary leap of innovation that Walt Disney created, invented, was going to become the one that almost sunk the ship, and it almost did. Disney was almost bankrupt at least 12 times in the history of that company. The genius of what he did, when suddenly they saw it and suddenly people responded, just absolutely blew everybody away. Then he became a hero. Could have been a bum. Almost was. If Walt Disney's brother, Roy Disney, didn't believe in him implicitly, if Roy Disney hadn't gone out always, always and said, Walt, if that's what you want, I'll figure out a way to get the money. Because Walt never could figure that out. Never, never, didn't know anything about it, didn't care about it. Spent it like a profligate. Always was looking for a better way. Never did it less than perfect in his mind. Ever, 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 and Roy sitting there trying to figure out how to deal with this lunatic. but knew the genius, was inspired by it. Talking about this, who is my consumer? What do they want? Disney knew, touched people. How can you otherwise explain the extraordinary tradition of a stupid little mouse? Think about it. What did the man touch in all of us? It's universal. Demographics, psychographics, why do people buy? People buy for reasons that none of us understand, and yet we need to. And so we need to choose who, because we're going to shape what we do in our businesses, all of us, to absolutely focus his attention and respond and respond and respond and surprise and delight and thrill the people who come into contact with us. And there's not a business that can't be done in. People ask me, what's the best business opportunity around? Let me suggest, ladies and gentlemen, the best business opportunities in the world are ordinary businesses. Ordinary businesses done in an extraordinary way. Take any ordinary business and do it in an extraordinary way, and I'm essentially saying your business can achieve anything that any extraordinary business I'm naming has achieved, no matter how big you wish to be. I'm also going to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that growth is an absolutely natural phenomenon in a business. If a business is not growing, it's dying. If your business is staying the same, it's dying. Just because you're sticking around, please understand, it's already gone. And so when small business owners say, well, I don't want my business to grow, I'd like to keep it the same, what they're really saying is, if my business got any bigger, doing it the way I'm doing it now, it'd kill me. And why doesn't the business grow? For a very simple reason, because we entered a business in the infancy stage, and the infancy business is defined by business depends upon its owner to work. So we're going to work on this business, not in this business, to create a turnkey operation, which does what? Which astonishes people in a stunningly original way that does not depend upon the owner to do it. It has an original way of doing what it does because that's what people want. And where do we find what that original way is? Easily, in the key frustrations of the people you're doing business with. What is it that frustrates people doing business with any business? And that's where your marketing position lies. And in the invention of this business, because that's in fact what entrepreneurs are, they're inventors of businesses that work. In the invention of this business, ladies and gentlemen, in the invention of this way of doing business that just stuns people. You know, it's extraordinary that in extraordinarily original businesses that are ordinary businesses, in other words, they're businesses that everybody else is in, they just do it differently. People come from miles around just to see how it works. I mean, they hear about it in the industry. Say, how in the world do they get those turns? How in the world do they do this? How in the world do they do that? Can't believe it. Got to go see it. And they go see it. And they find it out. They seek it out. And what they discover is something absolutely astonishing. That all the things they're doing in this business, all the things they're doing in this business are all little things done exceptionally well. Over and over and over again. And they can repeat it time and time again because it's a system. How many of you know that Federal Express is a fairly exciting place to be? How many of you know that Federal Express really does incredible things? I mean, do you know that it's really kind of amazing that they can get it there 10:30 tomorrow or they pay for it? Especially when you think that they send them all to Memphis, you know. I mean, how do they do that? Call up Federal Express. Ask for the regional director. Say, hi, I'm a business person locally here, and I've heard nothing but incredible things about your company. And I wonder if I could be so daring to intrude and suggest that I come by and take a look. Could you show me what you do? You know what the guy will say? Sure, we do that all the time. In fact, they got a process for doing it. Guaranteed. And I'll take you through the place, the business, and say, but if you have any other friends, please, we have groups. We take them through our business all the time, trying to figure it out. They see what we do, but they don't really get it. We don't understand the extraordinary genius behind this simple, stupid little business. We see what they do, but we don't really get it. Otherwise, everybody in this room would be doing it right now. And everybody in this room could. Because that genius exists in every single one of us. It is simply where we focus our attention. It is simply what we focus our intention on. It's simply when we have an intention and we have attention and we create the energy that's needed like a laser to produce this exceptional result that suddenly something happens in the business and the natural passion that exists within all people is raised to an exponential level. And that marketing development is really deciding just that quintessential thing that will define our business in the minds of our people. In the minds of our customers, in the minds of our suppliers and our lenders, in everyone's minds that we come into contact with, and I call that a PowerPoint of view, a PowerPoint company. And there are four categories of preference, and they're visual preferences, emotional preferences, financial preferences, and functional preferences. Visual preferences, emotional preferences, financial preferences, and functional preferences. So all of a sudden you have this PowerPoint matrix. These are the four primary influencers I have to satisfy in my business. I got to satisfy the supplier, just as I've got to satisfy the lender, just as I've got to satisfy the customer, just as I've got to satisfy my people. Not only satisfy them, I've got to astonish them. I've got to stun their sensibilities. I've got to do things they haven't thought of yet. And I have to do them visually, and I have to do them emotionally and functionally and financially. And all of a sudden now you have a track within which you can begin to look at your business. How does it measure up visually? How does it measure up emotionally? How does it measure up functionally? How does it measure up financially? Marketing development. The building of your position in the mind of people with whom you come into contact. And it's not just your customer, it's every person you come into contact with. And finally, systems development. And there are three kinds of systems, and we've been talking about systems all this time, but what I call hard systems, soft systems, and information systems. And by hard systems, I mean all of the visual components of your business. I'd like you to think about your business as a product. If your business is a product, it's just like a can of beans. If your business is like a product and it's like a can of beans, the question becomes, what must you do? How must you shape, color, design your business so that the consumer reaches for your can of beans rather than somebody else's can of beans? Now, ultimately, it's going to be the consumer for what? For your business. The person you're going to sell your business to. Now, please, you're sitting here saying, yeah, but I'm not going to sell my business, Michael. And I'm saying, if you don't sell your business, you're buying it. God, I hope you get that. If you don't sell it, you bought it. The question is it worth the price? Let me ask you a question. How many of you have recently valued your business, literally gone through a valuation of your business? You know what the business is worth right now. Okay. If you don't do that, you're making a critical mistake. Why? Because unless you know what it's worth now, you don't know what you need to do to sell it then. If you don't know what it's truly worth now, you haven't the faintest idea what you need to do then. So you need to have a picture between the disparity of where you wish to be and where you are. Let's get on with the systems. The system is the visual system of your business. This hard system, your trucks, your uniform. We talked about blue suits as opposed to brown suits, for example. And let's say you discovered that blue suits outproduce brown suits by 10%. That means you increase the impact of your business by 10%. And then you've quantified that. So then you orchestrate that. What does that mean? That you then internalize blue suits as the way we dress in our business. Now, here you say, yeah, but come on, everybody can't wear blue suits in their business. Otherwise, everybody will look the same. Don't worry about it. Take my word for it that everybody in this room will not run out, buy a blue suit, a white shirt, and a red tie, because if they did, or if I had any expectation they would, I'd be selling blue suits. They won't do it. Why? Because we don't dress for our customer. We don't dress for results. We dress for ourselves. And we do that emotionally. We don't do that rationally. If you want to differentiate yourself and your business, you better begin to look at this product of your business, this can of beans, and take intentionally the time to begin to ask yourself the question, what colors do we need to use? What shapes do we need to use? Everything in your business, from the store to the warehouse to the trucks to the garbage cans to the every little thing. And great businesses do that. It's no accident that McDonald's looks the way it does. It's no accident that Disneyland looks the way it does. It's no accident that Federal Express looks the way it does. Every single component part of that business has been scrutinized because every component part of that business has an impact. It either distracts from their differentiation or adds to it. It either provides this preferentially unique place in the world or it creates parity. And most businesses are in parity with most other businesses. And the only way they try to differentiate is by one of two things, either by the product they sell or by price. And I'm suggesting, ladies and gentlemen, that no great business has ever done that. IBM's products are not better than the competition's. IBM does business better than the competition. Soft systems, all the words you use. These soft systems are the way you say what you say, the story of your business. How many of you have a written story about your business that you tell over and over and over and over and over? Let me tell you about my business. Let me tell you about my business. This is what we do. This is why we do it. This is the history. This is where we're going. Here's the bust of our owner. Okay. And information systems. Information systems. And the information systems are simply the way you keep count. All they're doing is telling you how your soft systems and hard systems are working. All they're doing is telling you how the business is working. How many of you know what those critical ratios are in your business that truly can tell you at a glance whether or not your business is doing exactly what it needs to do? Well, you need to be able to do that. And so that's the story. That's the message. Talking about the seven critical steps to building a business that works without you rather than because of you. We're talking about the true freedom that a business should be able to create for the owner.
What I'm suggesting, if you begin to think about your business and your life that way, that in fact, rather than working in your business, you're working on your business, find the perfect way to make it work so that you can sell it, replicate it, and effectively, you'd be free to do it over and over and over and over again. And that's the most exciting, creative work in the world, the most rewarding. Because there is nothing like inventing something and to watch that little sucker work. And that's what Ray Kroc got all his joy from. He'd say, let me show you how this turnkey sucker works. You won't believe it. And they didn't. He had to chase them away with a stick. It works so well. And yours can too.
We talk about the point of view. I'm suggesting the point of view is everything. How you do everything isn't everything. The point of view that you bring to bear on everything is everything. And we're either suffering because of our point of views or we are expanding because of our point of view. And so the point of view that I'm sharing with you is that I'd like you to think of your business as something apart from you rather than a part of you. Now, it's impossible, in fact, for your business to be completely apart from you. Because if it's your business, if it's your idea, if it's your invention, obviously, you're very, very personally and intimately intertwined with it. But I'm suggesting that you begin to think about your business as apart from you rather than a part of you, that it's a thing, an organism, an entity which exists of its own. That it has a life of its own, it has a force of its own, it has a will of its own, it has laws of its own, it has an order of its own, it has a purpose of its own, it's got an intention of its own, it's got an ability to focus its intention with attention, it's a living thing. And so your invention is that. And that, in order to work, must be systematized. In other words, just as your body is a system that has laws that you don't understand, so your business must be thought of as a system, an integrated system that has laws you don't understand. How marketing interfaces with operations, how operations interfaces with finance, how finance interfaces with administration, how administration interfaces with whomever and whatever, how all of this interface goes on, how all of this interaction goes on, how all of these relationships go on, how all of these balances become discovered, how this entirety, this thing, this living organism finds its useful function. In a way that's healthy, productive, joyful, intentional, creative, etc., and so forth. And that a business can be all of those things when, in fact, it's created intelligently. And what I'm suggesting is that the highest intelligence that can be applied to a business is that entrepreneurial perspective, that inventive approach. That literal point of view which sees the business as apart from you rather than a part of you, so that if you were to die and be gone tomorrow, the business could go on of its own. Now, there has to be a reason that franchises, the business format franchises that I'm talking about, succeed so much better than independent businesses do. 95% of franchises work where 95% of all other businesses fail. They got a system. They've got a school. They teach people how to use this system, and they regulate the business against that system. And the best ones are continually innovating and recreating that system to make it better and better and better and better, because it's their systematic ability to provide their consumer with what their consumer is expecting, and to provide their consumer, better yet, with what they haven't even thought of expecting, that differentiates even the most extraordinary franchises from each other. And they guard that with a passion. So what is your business system? What is your turnkey operation? Begin to see, when I say to go to work on it rather than going to work in it, I have a very specific way of thinking about that. Literally working on your business strategically rather than working in your business tactically. Now, how do you differentiate between strategic and tactical? Tactical are those things you need to do to get through the day. There's the sales call you have to make. They're the production you have to get out. They're the floor you need to clean. They're the this you need to do. There's the client you need to meet. There's all of the stuff you do day in and day out in your business. That is what I call tactical work. What is the strategic work? Strategic work is what you don't have to do today, but what you better be doing in 3 years. Strategic work is shaping your business against the vision you have of that business. It's creating a business that works as opposed to going to work. Strategic work is the work that is called Kaizen, or continuous improvement, in Japan. It's the continuous process by which you address the question, how do we do that? What's standing in our way? Where is the improvement needed? Constantly, constantly asking that question. That's strategic work. Unfortunately, there's very little of that going on in most businesses. Because we're technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure, we get taken by doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it. And the strategic work simply gets lost. That because we're so consumed with doing it, doing it, doing it, busy, 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 getting through the day, there's very little energy or juice left to do the other work.